What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Who's ready? It's time for the biggest eyewear and eye care event of the season, Vision Expo East. Glasses addicts and eye care pros will be taking New York City by storm March 21st to the 24th, and we can't wait to see you there. Vision Expo East is the one-stop complete event for ophthalmic professionals, where eye care meets eyewear and education, fashion, and innovation all combine for a can't-miss experience. New this year, Opticon at Vision Expo and the National Federation of Opticianry Schools will debut the NFOS College Bowl this year's Vision Expo East. It's a fast-paced quiz competition that will test 12 students from the member colleges on their optical knowledge. And there's over 300 hours of education with new courses and specialty tracks, including a new myopia track and the Leadership Forum, where you'll master public speaking and storytelling your brand. On the show floor, you can shop more than 5,000 fashion and luxury brands for an unforgettable buying experience. And new exhibit hall neighborhoods are making their debut at Vision Expo East. The Block and Next will be highlighting celebrity design eyewear and emerging designers in the Career Zone, which is a new destination for corporate optical companies and attendees to network and meet face-to-face. And the networking opportunities, they're unparalleled. You can mix and mingle with the brightest stars, movers, and shakers in eye care on the show floor for receptions, ODs on Facebook party, and the Vision Expo opening party, to name a few. The relationships and experiences you create at Vision Expo East extend long after you leave the show floor. This year, Defocus Media listeners can enjoy free registration for the event. Just head to http://visionexpony2019.com/DFM for your free registration.
Greetings and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. My name is Dr. Daryl Glover, and today I'm here with a very special guest, someone that's really made his mark in the world of optometric management. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome our friend, Dr. Steve Vargo. Steve, how are you doing today?
Great, Daryl. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. For all our friends and listeners out there that may not know who you are, if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the world of optometry.
Yeah, I took not necessarily the direct route to what I wanted to do, but I graduated from ICO, practiced for about 15 years. Admittedly, always had more of an interest on the business side of things than the clinical. Somewhere along the way, I went back to school, got an MBA, and just kind of continued pushing forward with the business side, got into a little bit of speaking, writing some articles, that sort of thing. And eventually an opportunity opened up to do consulting full time. And that was about 4 years ago. So put the house up for sale and moved from the Chicago area down to Atlanta. So now I do full-time consulting for iDoc.
So I think you're being a little modest when you're saying doing full-time consulting. I mean, you've done over what, 3,000 consultations and coaching sessions with hundreds of optometric practices across the industry or the country, correct?
Yeah, I've been busy. It's been fun. I'll tell you what, Daryl, it's one of the unique benefits, and I've been truly blessed to get this position and be able to work with so many different practices, because I say that for context, not for, not beating my chest that I've done that, so many consultations, but I say it for context that I've had the opportunity to work with so many different practices and learn from them. And that to me has been such a wonderful experience. So as I sit here now, 4 years into the process, I think I've gained a tremendous amount of insight, but mostly from practices that I thought I knew a lot about business when I started, but what I've learned from practices, what works, what doesn't, and I continue to learn as life, right? It's an ongoing learning process, but I think that's something that I've really benefited from, being able to have that experience of working directly with other practices.
Now, with having that background with the MBA and being an optometrist, how crucial and how critical do you think it is that all optometry schools should start having that MBA program a part of the optometric degree?
Oh gosh, I think they have to do something to step it up. Now, it's been a few years for me since I've been in school, so I can't speak as an expert on what kind of programs are there now. I think some schools have been more aggressive with it than others. But I will tell you that one of the main struggles coming out of school for ODs that want to operate their own business is they really come out with a tremendous lack of knowledge on what it takes to run a business. And to be honest with you, a lot of misconceptions on what it takes to own and operate a business, on marketing, on leadership. And I think it's in some cases almost a disservice to the OD to not invest more into their knowledge on how to successfully operate a business.
Yeah. And I mean, you've done a phenomenal job of educating people, whether it's consulting or, you know, in your Optometric Management Tip of the Week articles, with just giving us more education in regards to optometric management. I know you have a background of being an author, and you've written books on staff management and selling, but you wrote one that I really love, and that's on leadership. And I really want to talk about that book. I mean, phenomenal book. I love the way that it was written, just the dialogue. You make it so that anyone can understand it. And I love that you took real life situations and just compared it to the optometric practice. I mean, it's just a phenomenal work. I want to discuss some of the lessons that you brought up in this book. There were five main lessons that you expressed. Number one, be clear with your expectations. Number two, empower your employees. Number three, develop your employees. Number four, discover your employees' strengths. And then lastly, accountability. I want to take it from the top. One of the things that really blew my mind was that you definitely had some great statistics in there. And I saw that there was some research from Gallup that discovered 50% of employees lack clarity on what is expected for them at work. That just blows my mind. Can you just elaborate on why being clear with your expectations is so critical in having a successful practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. To a large degree, leadership starts with clarity. It starts with getting very clear and making sure that the people on your team are very clear on what's expected of them. I think there's an assumption from many employers and managers that someone should know how to do something because they've worked in the field previously, or it was part of their training, or they were told something one time. The staff you're referring to is exactly that 50% of the U.S. workforce is unclear on job expectations. And it's easy to dismiss that and say, well, that's not my team because we're getting work done. We're not just standing around. But to that, I would ask, do your employees ever make the same mistakes over and over? Do your employees ever argue over who's supposed to be doing something or how they're supposed to be doing it? Or do you have employees who spend too much time on the wrong things? So the question ultimately can become, was this a poor hire, which is a possibility, or was this a case of employees just not being clear on what their responsibilities and expectations are? A lack of clarity involves a lack of communication. And interestingly, about half the time I talk with practices about underperforming employees, and by the way, that's a very common topic of conversation, but half the time I actually find that the employees haven't been given adequate feedback and training and resources on what they need to be clear on their job, to be clear on what the expectations are.
Wow. So how do we get to these employees and set the expectations? Is there a list of things that we need to break down with every new employee that we have? I mean, what's the best way to get our employees to know what their expectations of their job are?
I think it comes through just a higher level communication, ongoing communication. One thing you'll never hear me say, I haven't said it yet, and I don't plan to say it anytime in the future, is that you're over communicating with your team.
Okay.
If anything, there's a significant lack of under communication. So it's there's an assumption that we've covered it in training, or we told it to them once, that they should know how to do their job and know what's expected of them. But I'll tell you, Daryl, 90+% of the problems I hear with staff management, I can bring back to one commonality, and it's usually communication, some kind of a breakdown in communication. Either that's people haven't been given enough feedback on their job, they're not being held accountable, nobody's really clarified what their responsibilities are. Are the staff clear on the goals of the practice, on the core values of the practice? Way too often, they're not. They're just not. And that creates a lot of confusion and a lot of firefighting in the among the staff.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, there's so many times that I'll walk into an office and I kind of float between a couple of our busier offices here in the Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina. And sometimes when I'm talking to my team members, it just seems like they don't know what they're supposed to do. We haven't set the expectations. And until we do that, we're going to always be putting out fires or trying to figure out this, that, and the third. So I really agree. Be clear with your expectations, and it will make a big difference in regards to how your employees will work, and then also how that doctor-patient interaction will probably turn out towards the end of that.
Sure.
Empowering your employees. This is huge. I feel like as optometrists, we don't do this enough. We just expect for them to do a job and keep it moving, but we really don't empower them. We don't give them enough autonomy to be able to do various things within the office. Can you elaborate a little bit more about that?
Yeah. And speaking of clarification, I always feel like I need to clarify the first point in the book, which was, you know, while we talk about being clear with people, that's not the same. And I'm certainly not suggesting an environment of micromanaging people. Empowerment involves giving people some autonomy. But again, I don't recommend a micromanaged work environment. If people aren't involved in decisions and allowed to contribute, they'll stop coming to you with ideas. And I don't think that's ever a good idea. I would want my staff coming to me with solutions to problems and ideas to improve the practice. They're on the front lines.
Yeah.
They see things you don't. And you'll make better decisions with the more information you have from your staff. And I've had people say, I just want my staff to do what I tell them to do, or I need an office manager who can keep everyone else in line. Well, this isn't the military. Lives are not on the line. And if you want people to contribute and get involved, you have to let them have a voice. Otherwise, your good employees will leave you if you don't value their input. And maybe there was a time where the top-down hierarchy was the best approach, but almost 2019, I think the team approach typically works much better.
Absolutely. And just to give a prime example of, you know, including your team is your optical sales team. You know, you may have patients coming in asking for a certain brand and you may not carry that brand. But if you keep hearing it over and over, you want to be able to feel confident and comfortable telling your manager or your optometrist or your leader in the office that, hey, we need this type of brand because we've had so many people coming in and you don't want to miss out on that. And you have that patient leave and they don't stay loyal to the practice just simply because, you know, you want it to be a dictator and not actually listen to your team members.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're dictating everyone's job to them, then again, you're not going to get the feedback you need to make better decisions. And it's not a consensus per se. It's a lot of it is just everyone gets a voice. Most companies, most organizations have decision makers at the top, but the ones that you see typically having a much more collaborative environment are the ones who listen to the ideas, the suggestions of the staff and value their input. And it probably gets into a whole nother area, but again, talking about a high trust work environment as well. Does your staff feel that they can come to you with ideas? Can they challenge you on ideas? Can they be critical of you in a professional, healthy manner? But, you know, it gets into that as well. Again, that's something that some owners, some leaders might think is a negative thing, but I actually think it can be a very positive thing where people come together and can sort of push each other and challenge each other to get better.
Great advice. Great tips. So now that we know that we need to be clear with our expectations, we need to empower our employees. Let's talk about developing our employees. One thing that really hit me, it was a very strong line, and that was where you stated, is the employee failing the practice or is the practice failing the employee? I think that was probably the best line in the entire book for leadership, because this is something that is major and this is something that us as eye care professionals and leaders need to really look at.
Yeah. You know, people ask sometimes, how long should it take to train my staff? And I really hate that question. I know what they mean. And I know there's an onboarding process to give people the, you know, at least, especially someone who doesn't have experience, you know, the basic rudimentary skills they need to do the job. I get it. But training should never really end, right? Let's call it ongoing employee development. And companies that are known for great customer service and creating high-performing teams, they never really stop investing into their employees. And I mean, you can make this part of your weekly meeting or invite reps to do in-office demonstrations or send staff to CE. There's a lot of ways to invest into the knowledge of your team. And the ROI on that is better service, fewer mistakes, happier patients. And as consumers walking into a store, it becomes obvious pretty quickly how much the company invests in the training and development of their employees. It's just a completely different experience. So I certainly think there's a case to be made at times for an employee who fails the practice. But what I'll usually try to sort of peel back the layers and find out, has that employee been given adequate tools, training, and resources, feedback? Are they clear on what their expectations are and everything they need to succeed? Because if they haven't, you can make a case that the practice or management has actually failed the employee. And I'll tell you what, both those employees look very similar in their job performance.
And what about the case where even the manager may not be able to truly help and develop the employee simply because they don't know what they're doing? I mean, are you running into situations like that when you're out consulting?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have something that we talk a lot about in our consulting and with iDoc. It's the CEO model. And we try to impress that upon doctors. It's a challenging dynamic owning an optometry practice. I'll tell you, one of the main challenges is that the doctor spends in the average practice about 80% of their time seeing patients. And they're away from a lot of the issues going on with the staff. And they, in some cases, don't get adequate time to focus on running the practice. So, you know, we talk about the CEO model, that a doctor can kind of build a practice that he can eventually begin to spend more time with these sorts of things. Yes, in a lot of cases, the owner delegates management to an office manager, in some case leadership to an office manager, and that's fine, unless you're delegating that to someone who doesn't have any training, skills, or experience in leadership and isn't being given any guidance in that direction. Again, you're failing the manager if you do that. If you elevate someone right to that role of leadership, and you don't support them, you don't give them the feedback and the training that they need to succeed, you've basically failed your manager.
And to also just take it a step further, I mean, sometimes we have to look at your lesson number four, truly discovering your employee strengths. I mean, sometimes we'll, you know, put someone in a certain position, in reality, that's not where they excel at. What are ways that we could actually look at our team members and figure out, you know, what their best strengths are?
You know, there's a few different ways. One thing good managers do, they're always observing the people on their team to find out what they are good, what areas they excel in, what their interests are. I'll tell you that employers can sometimes be overly rigid with job descriptions. We all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, right?
Absolutely. It's
certainly some of our weaknesses could be improved through more training and development, but a lot of our strengths and weaknesses, let's be honest, they're kind of hardwired into our DNA. I mean, things like attention to detail and charisma, empathy, organizational skills. We spend a lot of time trying to fix people when I think we'd have more success putting people, if it's possible, in the office, putting people in positions that leverage their strengths and mitigate their weaknesses. And research has shown repeatedly that people are much more motivated and productive when they're doing things that they're interested in and good at. So I think something that effective managers do, they're always observing the people on their team, looking for what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and how can I, if at all possible, put you in a position that allows you to leverage those strengths more. It's also, I think, a good practice just to ask people sometimes. Probably a good discussion to have in a one-on-one meeting. Again, we're back to communication here. Something I'm a big advocate for is taking time more often than once a year at an annual review, but sitting down with your employees, maybe it's quarterly, maybe it's monthly, on a one-on-one basis to talk with them and just asking them, what do you like about the job? And what do you don't like? Again, if you're in a high trust work environment here, they should feel comfortable coming back to you and say, I don't really like this part of the job, and I don't feel like I'm strong in this area. And getting feedback from them on what motivates them, what demotivates them. And if you can structure their job in a way that allows them to do things that utilize their strengths more often, and it might require you to be flexible with job descriptions. I've learned that some employers struggle with that, but I think you'll have a more highly functioning team if you allow for some flexibility in the job responsibilities.
So what do you think about cross-training? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's great, especially in smaller practices where, I mean, if you've got four employees and one or two call off, it's almost necessary that you do have cross-training. I think in any job, we're always going to be doing some things that we enjoy more than others. And there's always some responsibilities that maybe we don't enjoy at all. But again, it's a matter of taking, you know, are there certain areas that somebody's very strong in that we could put them out? You know, somebody who's incredibly shy but has great attention to detail might make a good scribe, but not necessarily the most charismatic person to have out on your sales floor in the optical. And vice versa, you've got somebody with a very gregarious, friendly personality, very personable. That person would really, that talent would be wasted sitting behind a computer. So I think cross-training is great. Again, it's a team approach. people should be on board and willing, assuming that's your culture, to step in where needed, but more on a macro level, how can we get people, how can we recognize people's strengths and leverage that for the benefit of the practice?
Now, if you have an employee that's your star and we've recognized their strength, but they're experiencing burnout, what do we do about employees that are experiencing burnout, but they're great at what they do?
The superstar employees, we'll call them, because that's top of mind because I had wrote something about that a while back. They need to be challenged a little bit more. And you have to be careful with those employees because sometimes you can get content that they do a good job. They sometimes do a great job and you feel like you don't have to oversee them as often. So you leave them alone. They kind of fly under the radar. You spend more time trying to fix the underperformers. Don't neglect the all-star employees, because a lot of times they need to be challenged a little bit more. But here's the thing, Daryl, we're back to communication. It's always back to communication. Right. How do you know they're burned out unless you're having more conversations with them, unless you're sitting down? And again, this probably goes back to the vitally important component of having more one-on-one discussions with people, is just being able to sit down with them and ask them, how are things going? Are you happy? Are there things that you'd like to do? Are there things that we could give you to challenge you more? When you get that conversation going, it's much more productive for the work environment. You lower the odds you're going to walk in one day and see a resignation letter from your top employee. Because I've heard that repeatedly from employers who said, I came to work one day and found out that my all-star optician quit. I had no idea there was a problem. That's the problem, that you had no idea there was a problem.
That always blows my mind. I mean, like, I don't know, maybe I'm a little different, but I'm friendly with all my team members in my office, regardless of which office that I'm at. And everyone feels comfortable coming to me and I feel comfortable going to them. I love to take their ideas. And I know if they're having a bad day, I ask them, hey, what's up? Why are you, you know, not smiling today? Or why are you dragging? You know, like it's just a friendship, you know, I mean, we're about business and about making money and, of course, keeping patients first. But at the same time, I feel like we're all a big family, you know?
Me and you were on the same wavelength with that. Absolutely. I mean, you get it. And you're, you know, it took me a while to appreciate this. It's one of those things you often hear, and it just sounds cliche when you hear people say that your staff is your number one asset. It is. It's so true. For you to be able to do what you do. We have at one of our national conferences, we had a keynote speaker from the Ritz-Carlton, and that was a key point of hers, was that their staff was their number one asset. It's not the hotels. It's not the people who stay at the hotels. It's not their customers. It's their staff. And she said, she made a point that I always remembered. She goes, we can't do what we do without our team. So they're constantly investing into their
absolutely,
people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lesson number five. This is a huge lesson. Accountability. I was really blown away that 50% of the managers consider themselves terrible at accountability. Is that a real statistic? I mean, this is just blowing my mind. I mean, these are managers that are supposed to manage our offices and take care of things, but they feel like they're not great at accountability. What's up with that?
Yeah, Steve? I might have not believed that number either until I've started to work with somebody in practice where it's honestly, Daryl, in some practices, it's almost non-existent.
Wow.
This is a big one. This is a huge one. And research has found that holding people accountable is one of the, if not the most dodged responsibilities of leaders. And I think people avoid this out of a fear of confrontation. But if it's handled right, it doesn't have to be confrontational. The reason it's confrontational is because we wait too long to address the issue.
Gotcha.
By the time we have to address the issue, it's because we have to reprimand somebody. And my suggestion is to get in front of the reprimand. And a great definition of accountability is getting people to perform in a way in which they know in advance they'll have to answer for their performance at a later date. We're back to communication. It's always communication. So how do you do that? You do that by meeting with people frequently and asking them to report on outcomes. That's not confrontational. If you do that enough, that just, it ceases to even feel to the employee like they're in trouble. It just becomes standard operating procedure. Now, this could be frame sales, annual supply of contact lens sales, patient surveys, no-show rates, whatever it is that you're tracking. Consider what goals you have for the practice and what outcomes you want to influence. And when people know that they're going to have to report on these things, they tend to make it more serious. And bottom line is, nobody really wants to keep looking their boss in the eye and having to explain why they continue to underperform. So the conversations change at that point. Initially, again, it's I think from a management standpoint, it benefits you to be patient in the beginning. If someone's not performing at the level that you're asking of them, that you're requiring of them, find out why. Maybe they have a valid reason. Maybe they weren't clear on what you expect out of them. Maybe they weren't clear on priorities. Maybe they need more training. Be supportive of that. Step in to help them do the job better. But accountability comes when they know that they're going to have to keep reporting on outcomes and keep reporting on performance. And there's an assumption there that things are going to improve. Now, if they're not improving, then we need to find out why as well. If somebody's just not willing to improve, and that's a coachability issue. That the number one cause of new hires not working out is lack of coachability. So these are people that you're not failing them. They are truly failing you. You're giving them the feedback, the tools, the training. You're meeting with them. You're giving them everything they need to succeed, but they just refuse to implement what it is that you're asking them. So, you know, sometimes you have to make tough decisions and move in a different direction.
Awesome. Well, Steve, thanks greatly for hanging out with me today. Just to recap, you guys, just remember there are 5 lessons. Be clear with your expectations, empower your employees, develop your employees, discover your employee strengths and accountability. You guys should really check out this book, Eye on Leadership. It's full of great information, full of jewels. And Steve has other books that you could check out and read. And I'm pretty sure that it'll definitely enhance your practice and make your optometric management even better. Steve, for anyone that wants to get in touch with you or get a hold of your book, what's the best contact information for you?
Yeah, I'll give you my email is S as in Sam, V as in Victor, A-R-G-O at IDOC. That's IDOC.net.
Excellent. Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.